Hi, I'm Sima Shapiro, the host of the new Contemporary Lifestyle Radio Show for Women Over 40, featuring everything about your health, wealth, children, happiness, and anything else of interest to you, the listener. Please stay tuned. Today we'll be talking with a professor who specializes in LGBT and transgender or trans education and a trans woman and longtime trans activist. November 20th is Trans Day of Remembrance, a very fitting time to host this show. Professor Mary Andrus is professor of clinical education in a Research One university and a clinical psychologist who has been serving the LGBT community for more than 30 years. She was recently at the White House in September as one of the invited guests for Bisexual Community Briefing, with a historic focus on trans issues and communities of color. Most recently, she was at a workshop entitled The Trans Tipping Point with filmmakers, actors, and showrunners from the show Transparent, the film Tangerine, and other media representation. Nancy Nangeroni is a Boston-area trans woman who has been doing gender activism ever since she first joined the trans community in 1990. An MIT-degreed engineer, she has led organizations and demonstrations and made countless media appearances on behalf of her trans constituents. She founded and co-hosted Gender Talk, the leading radio program on transgenderism, whose archives can still be heard at gendertalk.com. She and her partner of over 18 years, Gordine McKenzie, author of Transgender Nation, recently moved to Albuquerque, New Mexico, where they plan to devote themselves to activism, writing, and nature. So welcome, Mary and Nancy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So let's start briefly talking about your journey and passion for this subject. Mary?
Sure. My first trans friend actually was when I was still in Ohio in graduate school. And I remember her coming out and feeling a great depth of empathy for her because Ohio, working class, she was working in the auto industry, was a very difficult climate to start identifying in her mid-50s as a trans woman. And then when I came to California for my clinical year of training, my university started giving me trans clients immediately. And so that was the beginning of me starting to work with trans clients was in 1995. From just the very beginnings of talking about self-discovery and through surgeries and just kind of adjustment to life. And then it's just been a very important part of my life in terms of some of the people that I'm closest to and the work that I've been doing to be involved in the trans community.
And Nancy?
I suppose my passion derives from a lifelong obsession with gender and what I see as the flaws in how our society imposes gender on us and the ways in which I suffered for many years because of that. So having finally come out of the closet in 1990, I guess since then it's all been sort of payback for me. And I would say that that is sort of the source of my passion.
So let's get to the nuts and bolts of the subject. Mary, tell me about what transgender means and what does it involve? Is it scientific, medical, therapeutic, or is it all of them?
Transgender is actually an adjective, and it is more of an umbrella term, and it encompasses anybody who wants to be under that umbrella that describes themselves typically different than the sex that they were assigned at birth. And so it could be somebody who is just gender nonconforming. There used to be more historically the term transsexual that was used that would fall under that. So there's some variance in the community of people that identify as trans from people who are just starting to do some of that identification, some people that are living full-time in the gender that they are most comfortably identified with. Some people have had hormones as part of that transition. Some people have had surgeries. Some people haven't, and I think that's an important piece to recognize because some people you might not even have a recognition of them being trans, and other people you might go, huh, that person seems gender nonconforming. I have some curiosity about that. But it's really up to the person who's doing that because it might just be somebody else who's gender nonconforming and doesn't identify as trans, and so we don't want to necessarily make assumptions.
I think the clarification for the general public might be the misconception that the trans individual has undergone hormone replacement or surgery, and as both of you well know, I did an enormous amount of research here, and I stood corrected that this is not at all the premise or the case.
Yeah, I would actually expand on that and say it's not just hormones and surgery, but the whole notion of transition, that in order to be transgender, one must transition from one gender to the other, and that is not the case. That's certainly not a requirement of anyone to identify as transgender.
Tell me a little bit more about what the requirement would be, or is there one?
This is very much the right of respecting an individual to say how he or she or they identify themselves. So the requirement is somebody's self-identification and saying that this is the community or a label that I'm identifying with.
Yeah, our society seems to have bestowed on its individual members the right to enforce gender on others. We didn't used to think twice about somebody saying, whoa, you know, that's not the right way to be a man or to be a woman. But in fact, there's just the right way to be yourself. And that shouldn't be the province of the people around you to enforce on you. It's really all about respect for individuality. And if you really go to the core of it, it's about more than being transgender. It's really about gender and the way that gender is used to enforce norms of behavior on individuals, and it's a rebellion against that in some senses.
But how might you counsel the general public to understand what they're seeing when they have no framework for this and really don't know how to respond?
Do you really need to understand it? When you see someone of a different religion observing their religious practices, is it essential for you to understand that in order to respect it? I would argue that what we should be counseling is to start with respect, and understanding will follow.
And Mary?
Yes, I would agree that this should be considered a variance. And so in the same way we're trying to teach anyone about a pluralistic community, pluralistic societies, it might be like, oh, if I've grown up and I've only been around people of the same race as me, I go someplace and I see somebody who's of a different race, I might have a question for my parent if I'm a child. And a parent who teaches that there are lots of different kinds of people, we've done a better job with that in terms of racial identity, but we haven't done a good job with that regarding gender identity at this point. And we still have this binary idea of girls are supposed to be ladylike and boys are, you know, don't be an offensive term. You know, so that flexibility in terms of not having to put people in those binary boxes, that's part of the respect I'd like to see happen more. So the person who's seeing somebody different, the most important thing you can do is just observe your discomfort and be curious. Curiosity then isn't so, let me walk up to somebody and say, like, why are you in a wheelchair or why are you different than I expect people to be? It's like, seek to understand, maybe do some research if you see somebody and don't understand something that's going on. And this show's a really good start. So I really appreciate you wanting to kind of bring more visibility to the trans community.
I think this is a vitally important topic, and I really think that so many listeners probably have so many questions that they have no way of getting answers to, and I'm really hoping that we sort of lay the foundation for that. Mary, can you give me some stats about how many transgender people there are in the U.S., any specific regions, age range, gender switch? And I also want to discuss the socioeconomics. What can you offer me?
So trans identities cross all races, sexes, classes. Just in general, I will start with that. The Williams Institute over at UCLA is where I'm getting some of my stats from related to this. They would say that 0.6% of adults identify as transgender, or in the United States, 1.4 million adults. And there are going to be some regional differences across the country. And just as I was saying, it's difficult to be a trans woman in Central Ohio. It's a little bit easier to be a trans woman in culturally diverse areas. So you're going to find people more on the coastal regions than you are sometimes in the Midwest or in the kind of central states. And part of that is, where do people go to feel comfortable? And if you're in a community where you've just grown up and you've been gender nonconforming and everybody in your community accepts you as different, then you might stay someplace. But if you're in a community where you faced a lot of harassment, you might end up leaving that community. And so that's why you're going to see some of the regional kind of clusters in places where there are more social supports, for people, and even the sensitivity of being able to go to a doctor. If you're gender nonconforming and you're going to a physician and your physician is not curious, open, and respectful, but they're actually hostile, you know, that might be a good reason to want to leave an area. The second question you asked related to class. One of the things that I think is important to say is that not everybody chooses to make physical or hormonal adjustments, and sometimes that is just a matter of preference. It could be like, I see myself as a variant person, and my self-esteem is just fine the way I am. And then for someone else, they might say, I would feel better if I could do more feminizing, you know, so that I am read more easily in the gender that I'm identifying with. And so some people might have the benefit of using hormones. They might be able to do physical alterations like surgery, investing in a new wardrobe, those kinds of things. But some people, you know, definitely might not be able to invest a lot in that way, too. Those folks still get to call themselves whatever they want to.
I'd like to add that there are significant consequences to being open about one's gender identity, one's gender expression. And so most people will have some amount of judgment they'll have to put into how much risk do I want to take in order to be true to my sense of inner gender. Also, some people feel a sense of responsibility to the people in their lives. I know men who enjoy cross-dressing who would live as a woman if they could, but they feel a sense of responsibility to their families. And so they content themselves with occasional recreational cross-dressing rather than living as the woman that they feel sort of themselves to be on the inside. Also, there are people who value their relationship with their family. And we know that a high percentage of people who transition lose their families. Some encounter violence. And so a lot of people lose their job. Very few people over the course of this movement. I don't know how it is for people who are transitioning today, but I know that myself and most other people who transitioned were either so uncomfortable in the workplace that they had to leave or were driven from the workplace. So there are serious consequences. And deciding how to respond to these feelings that will not go away is a matter of individual judgment and consequence.
Mary, in further setting the stage, what are some of the very basic words and the lingo that the listener may need to know to familiarize themselves with this topic?
Well, you and I were talking about the word cisgendered and just understanding cisgendered versus transgender. Mm-hmm. And I tend to use the word trans as a more inclusive term and not necessarily saying gender every time. Mm-hmm. So being aware of that. Also, adopting the pronouns that the person you're talking to tells you that they're comfortable using. It's very disrespectful to continue to call somebody he or she according to the gender they were assigned at birth if they're telling you that's not how they identify. So just having that respect of listening to whoever you're speaking with or how you're writing about someone, but being able to respect gender. And I guess the other thing is the politeness of thinking about what is respectful language or kind of questions and what is intrusive language in question. And so sometimes somebody who sees someone different might be curious, but you don't necessarily ask intrusive questions. You know, we typically don't go up to somebody and say, you look much better. Did you have a facelift? Mm-hmm. You know? But people do sometimes feel like they can intrusively ask questions of trans people about where they are in terms of body modification. And that feels very intrusive.
And when you're talking about Trans Day of Remembrance, just for an example, are you talking about the word transition or transgender or both?
Transgender Day of Remembrance is remembering the trans people who have suffered and been killed. We've had 26 trans-identified people killed this year in the United States. Mm-hmm. Many of them are trans women of color. So Trans Day of Remembrance really is about honoring and addressing the issue of violence in the communities.
And I'd like to add that the violence against transgender people is not like a drive-by shooting. It's usually personal and often has a deranged quality to it. In the Boston area, we had one trans woman who was stabbed over 20 times. We've had people just do crazy things to trans women. I mean, what comes to mind is something I don't even want to mention on the radio because it's so offensive even to describe what was done to these trans people. We have trans women who are murdered and then thrown in dumpsters. So the violence against transgender people is often, if not usually, expressed with a very pointed disrespect for that person's humanity. And the Day of Remembrance is our annual observance to remember, to remind ourselves, and to come together as a community in solidarity and strength in the face of what has been a unmitigated and unrelenting campaign of violence against our community.
We're talking today with two women about transgender life, living, and how society reacts and how we can help to change this. Mary, is transgender living on the rise in the U.S.? Are there any stats by generation? Is there anything about the zeitgeist of this point in time that has helped catapult it forward?
I think visibility is more of the issue here. Trans lives are more apparent. We have had trans women on the cover of major magazines. We have trans characters in award-winning television shows now. And what that does is it gives permission in a general way for this to not be such an anomaly. There have always been trans people, and in every culture there have been trans people. There are some cultures that are superficially more accepting than others. And so because we're seeing these media-generated images are giving people more permission to come out, because somebody might be struggling with their identity and they don't necessarily have the words for how they want to express themselves. And then they'll read something or see something and they'll go, me too. That's how I understand myself. And that is such a healing experience, to have that kind of mirror representation that tells you that you're okay, that there's nothing wrong with you. So I think because we have more visibility in the media, that is helping people come out more. I don't think it's increasing the numbers, but it's increasing the opportunities for people to be more out than they've been in the past.
The lower court has ruled on the new transgender bathroom policy, which is being reviewed by the Supreme Court as we speak. Tell me a little bit about its inception, what you hope that it will achieve, and what the reality of it is right now. Mary?
The trans bathroom law is another sign of disrespect because of people's panic about variance, about difference. And I don't think that people are necessarily thinking this through, but the United States has even gotten a bad rap in other countries because they are politicizing this as, we're going to make all bathrooms unisex, we're going to change the face of kind of safety in restrooms, which is not the issue. The issue is that trans people need to go to the bathroom, and they want to go to the bathroom safely. And so to force someone whose appearance is different than their assigned gender at birth, to force them to go in a bathroom where they don't look like they fit in that bathroom, is actually increasing an opportunity for violence, typically violence against trans women. To send them into a men's room just doesn't make sense. And for a gender nonconforming woman to step into a women's bathroom, she's not any threat to cisgendered women. But there's this misunderstanding as if somebody who's different than me is going to be a threat to me. And this is blatant discrimination against a small percentage of our community, but a percentage of our community that has just as much right to go to the bathroom in public places as anyone else.
And unfortunately, the people who are opposed to this regularly deploy blatant lies about what it is to be transgender and what it means to allow transgender people to use the appropriate restroom. And there's a tremendous amount of fear-mongering that happens, just as happened back in the civil rights days, about fears about allowing people of color to share the same facilities with whites, and the same kind of fears that were stoked back in the early days of the gay and lesbian liberation movement, when people were all up in arms about sharing a locker room with a lesbian or a gay man, and how straight people were going to come under attack from gay people in their midst. And of course, none of that materialized. Likewise, trans people do not cause trouble to other people in bathrooms, but it needs to be noted that trans people have been regularly assaulted just for the simple fact of using a bathroom. And so it's ironic how the opposition sort of turns reality on its head, claims that the general population is being threatened when, in fact, transgender people are routinely under threat for the simple act of using a bathroom.
Nancy, I'm impressed by your activism. In my own research, I see how much you've really put yourself out in the general public. You were one of the first to give voice regarding this movement. You had a weekly radio show. Tell me about the necessity to use your voice in this manner. Did you stumble into this role, or do you just feel that you're the best person for the job?
First of all, let me acknowledge that mine was far from the first voice. I was as afraid as anyone else when I was closeted, and there were a great many people who came before me,
sure,
who I learned from and whose arguments I took up. When one transitions, that sort of thrusts you into the public a little bit, and I recognized that there were not a lot of good representatives for us in the media. And in 1995, I helped start a national movement to show up when transgender people were murdered or when they were being unfairly persecuted. And what happened was I contacted a local newspaper and said, you know, if you'd really like to hear our story, our sad story, I'd be happy to talk with you. And so they took me up on that. I ended up on the front page of the newspaper. Next thing I know, I'm the trans spokesperson in the Boston area. I do this because I can. I grew up with a fair amount of privilege. I'm MIT educated. I did not have to worry about money or income as an engineer. And so I was able to take risks that other people couldn't take because they were already at such great risk in their lives. So my position of privilege granted me a certain amount of immunity from the kind of fears that are everyday reality for so many trans people out there. Because of that, and because I do care so deeply, I had a terrible motorcycle accident back in 1981 that nearly killed me, left me crippled, and I am very angry about that. That shouldn't have happened. That didn't need to happen. That grew directly out of my gender discontent, out of my self-hatred, because I lived in a society that said, if you're transgender, you're a pervert. If you're a cross-dresser, you're a pervert. And so that was wrong. It's the society that's wrong. Being transgender is perfectly natural. What's unnatural is to have these rigid gender roles, to have oppression around gender, which is felt most keenly by women in large. But transgender people happen to be the tip of the iceberg, the point of the spear that catches the most hell for society's gender uptightness. And, you know, I have a large reservoir of decades spent in the closet suffering. So I turn that anger about that into motivation. And I speak up where I can, but I also really work hard to respect other voices. I am not the lead voice in this movement. I was not one of the first voices. And people of color like Sylvia Rivera and Miss Major were there at Stonewall, and they were the first voices. But because they were poor people of color, they were not listened to. And hopefully that will change. And if I, as a white person coming from a male affluent background, if I can be heard where others are not, then I will be heard. But I will also say, you need to listen to these other voices, not mine.
Can you tell me very briefly what the process, what the transition process felt like for you? In the number of years coming to a decision and then making a decision and going forward, it must have been very painful.
First of all, everybody has their own way of dealing with the feelings of being in the wrong skin or being in the wrong society gender-wise. There is no process that people undertake. It's an individual journey of discovery. I would say that is a much more accurate way to describe this. But once I discovered the existence of the transgender community, thanks to my elders who were writing and who were going on television to publicize the fact of our existence, once I discovered this community, it was a joyful process for me. It was the most wonderful thing that ever happened to me in my life. And if you hang out with the transgender community and you are fortunate enough to meet people who are just coming out for the first time, who are just emerging from their cocoon, we often like to, you know, see ourselves as butterflies who have gone through this transformation. The transformation, by the way, spiritual, not physical, from living in hiding and self-hatred to self-acceptance and living a joyful existence. It's amazing. I walked on clouds for many, many years, and I felt so grateful to the world for allowing me to be myself. So the process, it's a spiritual process of coming to self-acceptance. That is the central process that people in the transgender community experience when they move from pretending to be something they're not to being their genuine selves. You cannot be intimate with anyone if you are harboring secrets, especially a secret so large as your fundamental feeling about your gender. When you move from living with that secret constantly on guard to being fully present, fully honest about who you are, then other people can see you more fully, and your ability to be intimate with other people expands dramatically.
We only have a few minutes left here, and I'd like to talk about the ways in which society is meeting transgender life and individuals. Mary, your thoughts?
So I think that it's important to pay attention to what laws are being passed and what kinds of breakthroughs may happen and what things might be taken away. Looking at even insurance companies and equity, there have been some movements as far as trying to cover some costs, and then there have been laws just in terms of changing identity. It's a challenge to get driver's license changes, birth certificates changed, passports changed. All of those are essential for somebody to feel like they have the same freedoms as somebody who is cisgendered. And so being able to stay up with both the medical and the legal kinds of opportunities and try to equitably allow or facilitate those resources for people, that's super important. I want to throw out a couple of resources. The Transgender Law Center is an important place. Nancy, you probably can do this a little bit.
Sure. The National Center for Transgender Equality is a great starting point. They're a national organization based in Washington. TransEquality.org is their website.
And your final thoughts for the listener?
I would like to say that I think the most important things for the future are that this movement continue to stand for a respect for individuality, that we continue to make progress by making friends, not by making demands, that we keep an eye towards expanding to being about gender in general and everybody's gender. This is not just about transgender people. This is about respect for individual gender, especially respect for women. And we never could have gotten where we are today without the help of a lot of other people who were not themselves trans identified. And we pay that back by working in solidarity with other movements.
And Mary, your final thoughts?
What I want to add, and thank you for doing this show, Sima, is that listeners maintain an attitude of openness and curiosity, and that understanding that there is a lot of lovely diversity in our world, and that those of us that have privilege need to use our privilege to be able to advocate and be allies to communities that need our support. That's that kindness, curiosity, and open-mindedness. I think that's going to be one of those things that helps move this equality along.
We've been talking with Professor Mary Andrus and activist Nancy Nangeroni about trans living, life, and how it impacts both the individual and our society. Thank you so much, Mary and Nancy, for joining me today. This was such an important topic to really start getting more information out to the listener.
Thank you, Sima.
Thank you.
I'm Sima Shapiro, your host of For Women Over 40, and to the listener, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. And until next time, I hope you take care.